Good morning. Last week we began the sugya of arvos, guarantors. As we pointed out, that there's a tremendous chiddush in the entire concept of arvos. Actually, two chiddushim. The first is that we know whenever a person wants to create an obligation, do any transfer, he needs a ma'aseh kinyan. Mishicha, hagbah, sudr. He has to do some formal act. Otherwise, if you just say something, you agree to sell something, you agree to buy something, in general, that does not work. In contrast, by arvus, if a guarantor tells a lender, go lend money to this person, I guarantee it, I'll pay it back, the words themselves are enough, and if the lender advances money on his say-so, the guarantor becomes chayiv. So the first chiddush is you do not need a ma'aseh kinyan. The second chiddush is that we know there's a concept of an asmachta. If a person makes a bet, a gamble, he says, if something happens, I will pay you X amount of dollars. So under many circumstances, that's called an asmachta, and we say there is no gemiras das, and even if he does make a kinyan, he can back out. Person who bets on a game, or the person accepts a penalty, that if I don't do this, I will pay you a penalty amount, if it's a guzma, if it's not related to the actual losses, that's an asmachta, and it's not enforceable in halacha, even if there was a kinyan. A guarantor is similar to an asmachta, because the guarantor is saying, if the borrower doesn't pay back, then I will cover. It's a conditional obligation, it only kicks in if there's a default, so it's an asmachta. And therefore, lahalacha, even if there is a kinyan, it should not work. So on the second problem, the Gemara explains the reason why a guarantor is chayiv in spite of the fact that it is similar to an asmachta, is the concept of hemne. When a creditor or a lender is reluctant to trust the borrower, he's afraid he won't get the money back. But then when a guarantor comes in, the creditor says, okay, if his word is good by me, I'm willing to lend out this money because I have confidence that the guarantor is good for the money. There's a hana. The creditor is showing that you are a trustworthy person. That hana, that he's willing to risk money on your say-so, is a hana that either kinyan kesef, and bahi hana, because you're getting the benefit that you're being shown to be a trustworthy person, that's enough to have a gemiras das, even where there is an asmachta. So to avoid, the reason why arvus does not have asmachta is because of this concept of hemne, the hana that you're getting, the pleasure that you're getting, that the creditor is lending money on your word. What's interesting is the Gemara does not explain why you do not need a ma'aseh kinyan. The Gemara doesn't discuss it, doesn't ask as a kasha, they know to root him. We're really left to our own why an Ariv, or how an Ariv becomes responsible. The Ariv didn't get anything. He didn't lend him the money. He didn't make any kinyan. It was just dibur ba'alma, just words. So the Gemara does not explain why you become chayiv. So the Achrayim are medayik, a number of different approaches in the different Rishayim. The Reshbam that we had in the Maram HaKaymas last week says there's a concept of shlichus. What he says is whenever there's a guarantor, a guarantor tells the lender, go lend him the money, I'll pay you back. Zogt Reish Rambam, we look at the lender as when he advances money to the borrower, it's like he's doing it as a shlichus, as an agent of the guarantor. Because he only lends money because of your say-so. So when he takes money out of his pocket and gives it to the borrower, we look at it as if he's a shliach of the Ariv. Since he lends money as a shliach of the Ariv, that is enough for the Ariv to be neschayev. It's as if the Ariv is using the money, if you will, by having it lent out to the borrower, and this shlichus itself is why the Ariv is, or how the Ariv becomes chayiv. The Rashba brings down this pshat, and then he says he uses shlichus to put it in a different way. The Rashba suggests perhaps the shlichus is the other way. We look at the borrower as a shliach of the Ariv. When the borrower accepts the money from the lender, we look at him as an agent of the guarantor. It's as if he was accepting it on behalf of the guarantor. So now the guarantor is like he borrowed the money. And then the guarantor tells the borrower, go ahead and spend it. So we have two ways of understanding a shlichus. We have the Rashbam that says that the lender is acting as the guarantor shlich by advancing the money on his say-so. And therefore, when he gives out the money, the guarantor becomes chayiv. We have the second pshat in the Rashba that the borrower is the shliach. When the borrower accepts the money from the lender, it's as if he's accepting it on behalf of the guarantor, and that's enough to create an obligation on the Ariv himself. I mean, the borrower spends it. Well, he does. To the extent that you... Well, again, there's one hana that the guarantor has that you're trusting him. That's the Gemara's hemne to get rid of asmachta. What we're saying over here is shlichus, that when the borrower accepts it, he's acting as a shliach for the Ariv. It's now the Ariv's money. The Ariv then lends it out to the borrower and lets him use it. So since the Ariv at this point is essentially becoming a loiva, that's why he's responsible to pay back the funds. Now, although we're using the language of shlichus, the Stipler points out that we cannot take this literally to be a regular shliach shladim kamoisai. There are a host of problems that would create. You cannot have a shlichus by a goy, you know, and other problems as well. So it's really a borrowed terminology. But the point is, we look at the Ariv as if either he received the money, some benefit from the money, or as if it was lent out on his say-so. So this is one approach in the Rishonim. Now, Machan Ephraim is medayik that the Rambam cannot hold like this. And then we're going to see that depending on which pshat we use, there'll be tremendous nafkaminas lahalacha. The Rambam has a famous shita that if a person goes over to two Edom and says, I owe Yankel $10,000, or I'm being nischayev of $10,000 to Yankel, even though he doesn't do any maisa kenya, he just makes the statement, as long as it's done in front of witnesses or it's written down on a shtar, that is enough to create an obligation. Now, what the pshat in that is a whole tumult and siman mem. It's not for now. But what's interesting is when the Rambam says this chiddush, he says that if I tell two edim I owe this person money, then you have to pay it back. He says that by saying these words, you're nischayev kimoy, just like an ariv becomes chayev to the malach. Now, zak the Machan Ephraim, what does the Rambam mean to? What does the Rambam mean when he says that? Saying I owe a person money, that chiyuv is like an ariv. If you learn like the Rashba, that the pshat in ariv is that when you lend money to the borrower, when the borrower takes it, it's as if the ariv, he's being a shliach and being zeichen for the ariv. Does it make any sense for the Rambam to say that just like we find by arvos, you can create a chiyuv? So if you go over to Adam and say, I owe you $10,000, then there's a new chiyuv? No. According to the Rashba, Arvus is a question of shlichus. When the lender gave money to the borrower, it's like he gave it to the Ariv. You want to know why the Ariv pays it back? Because it's like he got the money. So for the fact that Rambam compares Arvus to a case where he's creating a completely new chiyuv, the Machan Ephraim says, we see the Rambam has a different shot. The Rambam learns the shitasoi that a person can create chiyuvim on his own without receiving any consideration in exchange, even without a kinyan when it's done in front of Edom. And a makar, the Rambam's makar is arvus. So we see that according to the Rambam, arvus has nothing to do with the fact that it's like he got the money. It is a new chiyuv, and it can be. You can create this new chiyuv with the shtar. You can create it with edim. But certainly, he does not need the Rashba's shlichus. We do not look at it as if the Ariv actually got the money from the lender. Now, the truth is, even in the Rambam, although you see that he can't hold like the Rashba, certainly, arvus is not like the guarantor got the money. You still need to say an extra chiddush here, because normally to create a chiyuv you need either a shtar or you need edim. Arvus, simply by saying I'm an ariv, that's enough. So you will need another hesber. The Ritzva seems to say there's a kinyan kesef. That the same way the Gemara says that the fact that you trusted the ariv is enough to get rid of asmachta. The Ritzva says that trust has value. It's like you were. It has value. It's shava kesef, and therefore it's like you were paid to accept this obligation. So because you had a certain amount of hana that on your word the money was advanced, therefore you just create a new chiyuv like chayv ani lachmana b'shtar. No, so that was the other point. The shlichus over here, I said, is lav dafka. It does not mean a real shlichus, because, again, we're dealing with an order of stam, not an order of kavlin. And therefore, the Rashba agrees that the obligation that you have, you're not the borrower. The loiva is the real borrower. His point is, since it was only being lent with your say-so, When the loyiv is getting it, we look at it as if you got something. Not a real shliach shalom k'moisa, but you benefit from it, and because you got something, you're able to be nischayev. So basically, we have two approaches. We have the approach of the Rajba, Rajbam, there's shlichos, the money being advanced as your shliach, and that's why the guarantor is responsible. We have the Rambam slash Ritva, that it's a whole new chiyuv, and this chiyuv is created because of the hano of kesef that he got. Now we understand a little bit of the background. Let's talk about some cases of halacha l'maisa. We pointed out last week that one of the most fundamental halachas in Arvos is that if you don't make a kenyan, there's no shtar, it's just your word. The reason why you're chayev is because of hemne, because the lender trusted you, he advanced the money on your seisa. If that's true, it applies only when you became a guarantor before the money was advanced. You go over to the lender and say, lend him money, I'm good for it. However, if the money is advanced, and only afterwards the creditor starts getting nervous and starts scrambling and says, get me an Ariv, so the fact that you say you're being an Ariv is meaningless. It's just Dibur. You're not bound to the words, because there was no trust here. He lent the money before you were an Ariv, and therefore, in the absence of a new Kenyan, you're not going to be responsible to pay it back. Now, we mentioned last week that a simple case is you become an Ariv before the loan is advanced. A second case that's discussed is what happens if the money is advanced, but the lender demands collateral from the borrower. The borrower then wants to go ahead, he wants to refinance, he wants to borrow money, he wants to use the collateral somewhere else. So he asks the lender to release the collateral. The lender says, I'll only release the collateral if you bring me an Ariv. So the halacha we hold, that if the Ariv says, release the collateral, I'll pay back the loan, that itself is enough to be chayiv. Because although the money isn't being lent al piv, releasing collateral is the same level of trust. You're obviously relying on this guarantor, and that's enough to be chayiv. Now, the question that we dealt with last week is what happens if the collateral is not worth the full value of the loan? There's a $10,000 loan, there's $5,000 of collateral. When the Arif says, release the collateral and I'll take responsibility for the loan, can he be held responsible for the entire loan? So the question was, how much are you trusting him with? Really, you're only trusting him with $5,000, because the collateral that you're giving up is only worth $5,000. So we said over from the Radvaz that the Hemne is only on $5,000, and that is the only amount that you can go after the Ariv, because either way, that's the only amount that you trusted him, that is his entire chiyuv. So we discussed last week various svaros. Maybe you can say Lididi Shavali, that perhaps the collateral, we don't look at the market value, we look at the fact that it would have been redeemed. We went through different svaros, which we're not going to go revisit that now. But let's take a moment and think about this argument. Is it really true that if you give back, if you're the Hemne, you trust him with $5,000, you can't become responsible for a $10,000 loan? Maybe. The moment the lender trusts the guarantor with any amount, that's enough to create a kinyan. So if you think about it, it really should depend on the machlokes rishonim we just mentioned. If the reason why a guarantor has to pay for the loan is like the Rajba, that when a person lends money when it gives the money to the borrower, it's like the borrower is zoichen it for the guarantor, and the guarantor therefore has to pay it back. If that's the pshat, if you only lent $5,000, can the guarantor have to pay you back more than that? No. If a guarantor would say, go lend him $10, and I'll pay you back $20. In Hilchos Arvos, that doesn't make sense. Because if the whole yesod of Arvos is, whatever you give the borrower, it's like you gave it to the Ariv cannot be responsible for more than the borrower got. And therefore, in this case, where if you released $5,000 worth of collateral, the Ariv cannot be responsible for more than that. He will only have to pay back the $5,000, not the full value of the debt. That's according to the Rambam. On the other hand, what did the Rambam hold? The Rambam held an Ariv's chiyuv is a regular chiyuv. Just like you go over to two Adim and say, I owe $5,000 to this person. So as long as you say it in front of Adim, you owe that money. Even though there's no consideration, there's no kinyan, that's enough. Arvus is a similar idea. That if you can kabbal Arvus, boom, there's a new chiyuv. The way the Ritva says, it's like there's a kinyan kesef.
Why
The Rambam doesn't say any of this. The Rambam just says that you can have a chiyuv either by b'shtar or with two edim, and says arvus is the same. The problem is arvus works even when there are no edim. So if it's this exact same halacha, if you go without edim, you go over to someone and say, I'll pay you $5,000, that's nothing. There are no edim here. By arvus it will work, so you're going to have to say, the Rambam's missing a piece, that he doesn't explain why. But there must be some form of kinyan or hana that obviates the need for edim, as opposed to a regular schaivas that needs the edim. So according to the Rambam, where it's stam echiv, where you have to go, however, whatever hana you need, once there's an amount of hana, you can be mischaiv yourself in any chiyuv. There's no reason to peg the chiyuv to the amount that was advanced on your seisa. So even though he trusted you with $5,000, once that hana is worth a penny, once it's a kinyan kesef, you can be mischaiv l'chayr for any amount. And therefore, in the Rambam, perhaps, there's no limitation. And even though they only released it $5,000 of collateral, that might be enough to be mischaiv the full amount. Now, l'halacha, most poskim say, you cannot be, an arev is not going to be responsible for more than the lender actually laid out. No, which, according to the Rajba, is good. And according to the Rambam, although l'chayr according to the Rambam, there shouldn't be such a limitation, in truth is, the Sma points out, it's not muchach. Because as we mentioned before, there are two problems. There's one problem of a kinyan, which we went through, the Rajba, the Rambam, different ways to avoid the problem of a kinyan. There's a second problem of asmachta, that this is that obligation is a speculation. Asmachta loy kanya. On that, the Gemara said, hemne, that because he relied on you, there we don't have a problem of asmachta. The way the Sma is mashma, it's not the Sma in Shulchan Aruch, it's in a tshuva, in the tshuva saga oinim, simen dalet, and simen hey. What is mashma is, this concept of hemne to get rid of asmachta is, if you trust me for $5,000, I'm nischayiv to make sure you get that money back. So forget about kinyanim. In kinyanim, maybe the Rambam's right. There's no limit, you can be nischayiv for more than the person advanced. But even if in kinyanim it's true, you'll still have a problem of asmachta. And therefore, because of the problem of asmachta, the arev can only be chayiv of the amount that the lender actually gave out, not more than that. So in such a case, whatever the collateral was worth, that is the amount the arev becomes responsible for, but more than that, not. Now, collateral is one case, but there's a much more common case, and that is what happens if a person becomes an arev for a halva beribis. Now, we'll start off with a case where there's a guy involved, where someone there's a yid lending money to a guy, and he's afraid the guy is a credit risk. So you accept arvus. You say, lend it to him, I'll make sure you get paid back, your principal plus the interest. Sure enough, the guy defaults, and you go after the guarantor. So on the principal that was laid out, does the guarantor have to pay? Yes, he guaranteed the money. You only lent the money, you advanced the funds on his say-so, you relied on him, he has to pay it back. The problem is on the ribbis. He only advanced $10,000. A year later, he wants $11,000. That extra $1,000, was he moitzi hoitzoyas al piv? Did he spend it because of the guarantor? No, it was never advanced to him. And therefore, the Nesiva says that a arev on ribbis will not work because it was not a loss from the lender's pocket. Nothing that came out of the lender's pocket will not work. Again, if you make a kinyan, you make a hischaivus, you can do it. But in regular arvus, it will not work because it is not a shas matan mois. Now, although this is true, we mentioned that if you have a tenant, landlord-tenant, the tenant moves in, and very often the landlords are nervous. Perhaps the tenant won't pay rent. So they'll insist on having someone guarantee the rent. Here, the place can say that it will work. What's the difference? What's the difference between guaranteeing interest, which we say it's not moitzah etzalas al piv, you can't be chayiv? Why is rent any different? So here, the difference is that when someone's living in your apartment, essentially every month that goes by, he's using your item, he's being mishtamish with your chayfetz, that hishtamishes his value. So every month he's taking another $2,000 from you. It's not cash, it's value of services. So in that case, every time he lives there, you have the arev that said, every day or every month you let him stay there, I will become an arev for that. There he becomes chayiv. Mashenkein ribbis, although actually the nesivus learns ribbis is like a schirus of money, but it's not. When you lend someone money, the pshat is not he's holding on to your money and using it, and every month because he's paying for the use. When you lend him money, he spends it. Your money is gone. You have a deal with him that, depending on how much time it takes to get it back, you're going to accrue interest. But it is not the hishtamshus of your money. Your money is long gone. It's spent. There's just a chayv that's there. So while in halacha you could create such a chayv, it is not the same as using his money. It's not the same as being moitzi atzalas al piv. And therefore, in the absence of a kenyan, you cannot have an arvus on the interest that accrues. Correct. On a late payment fee, an echanami, that l'chara would be like ribis, and that would l'chara also be an asmachta. You can't really call that an echanami. An apartment is be'en. Every day I'm using your item, it's the equivalent of you're giving me another, you're giving me something. You're not giving me dollars, you're giving me hishtamshus that has value. When you borrow money, the money is spent. You're not using his money. You have a choiv to pay it back, and when you pay it back, the relationship will end. But since it's not each month you're using his thing, you just haven't paid it back, and that's what the interest fee is for, that is not called moitzi atzalas al piv, and there you cannot have arvasa. Now, what about, so we have two cases. When you're guaranteeing interest, that's not called moitzi atzalas al piv, you would need a kinyan. When you're guaranteeing rent, there you could be responsible to pay. What about an iska? What happens when there's an iska and there are profits being generated? So here we have an interesting machlokes. The Shach says there's no difference between interest and iska. It's all future thing profits that are earned in the future. No arvus. The Ktzayis argues. The Ktzayis says when you have an iska and there are profits, what are you getting that money for? Is that renting the money? Is that like regular ribis? No. What an iska is, as we discussed many times, is a chatzim of a chatzim bikadim. Which means when you give someone money with an iska, half of the money that you give him is a pikadon. It's your money. When he invests it, he's managing your money on your behalf. If profits are generated, whose profits are those? They're yours. He's managing your money. Now, al pi din, what should happen the moment the profits are generated? He should put it in a safe deposit box, and when you come, he should give it to you. It's your money. He's just your shliach managing your money. Zok the Ktzayis, when you give someone money with an iska and someone guarantees it, what's the guarantor saying? He's saying that when the money is invested and earns profits, really those profits should be put in a lockbox and given to you. The borrower wants to go ahead and spend that money. He wants to reinvest it. He wants to use it. Okay? Now already he's asking you to be moitzi atzalas al piv. He's asking that you lend him or let him use your profits. I'm an ariv on that. And therefore, Zok the Ktzayis, it's true that when I guarantee future interest that never existed and never will exist until it's paid, there's no arvus. But on profits, the moment the profits are generated, this dollar now belongs to the investor / lender. If the lender says, you can go ahead and spend it because I have a guarantor to rely on, Zok the Ktzayis, that's called Shas Matan Mois. And as profits are generated and spent, at that point, the arvus will kick in. In contrast, when you borrow and you have to owe someone, you owe someone interest is a chayv, you owe it. When you pay it, it'll become his. But the pshat is not every day that goes by and as interest accrues, there's a specific dollar of yours that now belongs to the lender that he's allowing you to spend. Profits over here, on the other hand, where you're managing the investment for the lender / investor, the profits that are generated are his, it belongs to him, and therefore the right to spend it is can create an arvus. Oh, excellent. So Zelk, the Pesach Chayshin points out, this is a real iska. The olden days in iska meant you gave the money, half was an investment, half was a loan, and it was managed like a real partnership. Today, what happens? When you give a heter iska, the paper says it's a real iska. But what payments are made? Do you split the profits at the end of the day? Do you give half the profits to your investor / lender? No. What the iska says is, at the end of the day, if you don't want to make a shvuah about what happened, you don't want to bring edim, you pay the 10% and everyone's happy. That's a scharis pashas. That's the way a heter iska works. Zakar Pesach Hoshin, when you at the end of the year, when you're paying that 10%, are you giving him his money back? No. On a heter iska, we don't even know if there ever were profits generated. We have no idea. You're making this payment to buy out your obligation to prove what happened. In this case, Dr. Pesach Choshen, since the Ktsoisis Chiddush is only when there are known profits that were generated, and then because of your arvas, he allowed you to spend it, you become chayiv. But a heter iska, we have no idea whether profits ever existed. If they did exist, they were never segregated. No one ever had a cheshbon of what's where. So in a modern day heter iska, the Pesach Choshen writes, everyone would agree that an arvus would not work on the profit unless there is a special Kabbalah's kinyan. Now, this is a very common occurrence where people will, hard money lenders or people will lend money with a heter iska. They will write the heter iska. They'll create an arvus. But in the absence of a kinyan, then the arvus will not help on the revachim, will not help on the profits or the interest that are accrued, and therefore, halacha l'maisa, you have to make sure that there is a kinyan written in the shtar, otherwise, while you'll get back your keren, you will have a very hard time recovering the interest. Now, in any of these cases, you always have a question of situmta. Perhaps the shtar that's written will qualify as a kinyan, even if not in halacha, simply because of minhag ha'seichrim. That's a question that a Beis Din will have to deal with depending on the case. But strict halacha, you will not be chayiv, the Ariyev will not be responsible on profits unless a special kinyan was made.
Simple kinyan sudr is enough. I am a
kabbal. Yes, kinyan sudr would be enough. A shtar is a machlokes, whether shtar is a good enough kinyan for arvus. So because of the machlokes, you would have a kimli, unless you come on to minag ha-seichrim, you're going to be up the creek if there's just a document, which is typically the case. Now another case of matan mois, is what happens, and this is also quite common, a person is lending money, he wants a guarantor, but he wants a guarantor that he knows, that he has a relationship with. Now the borrower does not move in the same circles. He doesn't have anyone who is willing to be an arev that the lender is comfortable with. So what happens very often is that he finds someone who was willing to be an arev, but again, it's not acceptable to the lender. But this arev knows someone who the lender trusts. So the arev tells the borrower's friend tells the lender's friend, you be an arev on this deal, and I'll guarantee that you won't lose money. In other words, you have an arev on an arev. And this way, if the borrower defaults, the lender is going to go after his friend after the arev. Now this arev, instead of being stuck paying the money, he now has the ability to go after this second arev and recover his loss. This is ma'isim b'cholyon. The question is, does that second arev, you know, when the lender gives the money to the borrower, certainly the first arev, the lender's friend, becomes chayiv. Because on his say-so, the money was advanced, he becomes an arev. What about the second arev? How does the second arev come into the picture? If there was no kinyan done, does he become responsible to the first arev? The first arev didn't spend any money on his say-so. So over here the halacha is that yes. Although the first arev didn't advance any money on the second arev say-so, he did something which is almost the same. He put his neck on the line. He was makabel responsibility for the loan. The same way when a guarantor tells a lender, go lend the money and I'm good for it, that's enough to become chayiv. If one guarantor tells another one, you become an arev, you co-sign this loan and I'll back you up, if there's any problem, I'll pay for it. So although he wasn't moitzet hoitzalas al peiv, the guarantor didn't spend any money, but he became nischayiv, he accepted a liability. Accepting a liability is enough to create an arvus. And therefore, even though there was no kinyan, there's no shtar, there's no anything, the fact that the first arev accepted, agreed to be an arev only because of the second person's guarantee, that is enough to be mechayev the second person, and the second person would be mechayev to backstop the arev. Now obviously if there's a default, the first arev is going to have to pay. He's not going to be able to tell the lender, you know, I'm only an arev because of the second guy, so wait until I collect from him and then I'll pay you. The halacha is, you were the arev, the lender relied on you, you have to pay. So you have 30 days, that is non-Beis Din. More than that, you won't have. He has the right to turn and go after either the borrower or the second arev, but he cannot use that as defense against the lender. The lender has to be paid, and then at that point he will be able to recover from the second guarantor.
What did the first
Again, so even though there's no money advance, the fact that you accept liability, that itself is enough to create an arvus. Now, the Rashdam discusses a fascinating case, which also it comes up very often today, and it's a tremendous chiddush lahalacha. What happens if a person says, this person who falls upon hard times, he needs money, he's constantly borrowing money, constantly needing arevim, he has a close friend who's trying to help him out, and every 3 days he's busy tracking down this friend, can you sign arvus on this loan, can you sign arvus on that loan, and sometimes he's around, sometimes he isn't around. Finally, the friend says, you know what, takes a blank piece of paper and says, whoever lends money to Yanko, I am an arev for him. And he gives it to him. He gives him a stack of such papers. And now the borrower can go around from gemach to gemach borrowing money. He has with him his shtar arvus. He doesn't have to go ahead and call the arev each time and ask him for the money. That, perhaps, a bal chesed. Okay, so there's a cap. He writes. So that's actually a separate. That's actually a separate issue. There's a separate question whether you can accept unlimited arvus. The Rambam holds there's no such thing as a davar she'en l'kitzva. The halacha we hold, while it's not wise, it will work. But again, if you're offended by the case, we'll put a cap up to $5,000, and he gives out a stack of them. What's the halacha? What? But it's arvus. It's the lender is giving out $5,000 on your say-so. So Zog the Rashdam, a tremendous chiddush. The Rashdam discusses the sugya called Shemeya Koyu Yichtav Get. And what the Rashdam says is essentially, okay, I'm going to go with the Ktsaisis Hezbron the Rashdam. Why is an Arev responsible to pay? Like we ask a question, well, what's the kenyan? So what does the Rashba say? That there's actually the Rashbam. There's a shlichus. When the lender gives money, when the Arev tells a lender, go lend it to him, I'll pay you back. So when the lender takes $5,000 out of his pocket, he pays the borrower, it's like he's acting as the Arev Shliach. Zog the Rashdam, that's very nice. When I go over to the lender and say, go lend him money, this is tzivoy. Lend this money, and I'll pay you back. On the other hand, if you write this blanket statement, whoever gives money, I will be an Arev. Were there any instructions, a tzivoy, go lend money on my behalf? No. Zok the Ktsois, his explanation of the Rashdam, that to become chayv and arvos, you need a lashon of tzivoy. 10 mana l'poini, I'll pay you back. Give it to him, I'll repay you. However, this generic language of whoever will advance money, I will be an arev, where there was never a tzivoy, go give money to him, and I'll pay you back. Zok the Ktsois, there's no tzivoy, there's no kinyan, and you will not be chayv. Okay, good. We'll get there. Now, the Ktsayis in the Rashdam is talking about where it was a verbal, generic authorization. There are two other points that are made about this shmuz. One is the Shai Mishpat is medayik from some Rishayim, even a bigger Kaddish. Shai Mishpat is medayik from Rishayim that for Shlichos, at least in this context, you have to speak directly to the Malva. Even if you would write, you know, I hereby instruct you to lend it out, if there's no communication between the arev and the lender, you can say that he's acting as a shlichus. You can't make a generic without, if you don't know who the lender is, you're just saying, whoever does it, I'm giving you this tzivoy. So the Shai Mishpat is medayik from a number of Rishayim, it will not help. You have to know the identity of the lender before you become an arev. A third point that's made, and this is again, Teres Emes, Machan Ephraim, is that although if you use the language of Ischaivos, whoever gives money, I will be an Ischaiv to pay him. So then forget about the Sugi of Arvus. We have a regular Chiyuv. I can accept any Chiyuv that I want if I make the right Kinyanim. So if I say, whoever gives money, I'll be an Ischaiv, that'll work. The problem in these cases are when you use the language of Arvus, I will be an Arev. To be an Arev, there you need the specific shlichus, you need the specific tzivoy, instructions, go ahead and tell him to go to lay out the money on your behalf. So the Shach brings down this halacha, the Rashdam, and the Rashdam and the Ktsayis both say it, and it's hard to be moiti mom and kenegdoi, that if there's this generic accepting responsibility, it's not a lashon tzivoy, you do not become chayev as an Arev. L'chayr, this is based on the Hezber of the Rashbam. Now, the problem is that although the Shach over here brings down the Rashdan that there's no Arvus. In Simin Nun Ches, the Rashdan bring the Shach quotes a Teres Emes that argues on the Rashdan and says he argues about this whole problem and he says the Arvus will work. The Achrayim are busy with the Steer in the Shach. What a number of them say, and again there are different reasons for this, is that it depends whether this is a verbal statement or a written statement. If you say generically, whoever lends money, I will be an Arev. The other way we have the Rashdan, it's not a tzivoy, it wasn't instructions, you can't be responsible to pay. However, if you write a shtar that says, whoever lends money, I will be an Arev, so effectively, when the borrower hands that shtar to the lender, at that point he sees the Arev's signature, he sees that he has a document in front of him. There, according to many Achroinim, the Shach's maskona is that Arvus would work. And therefore, today in the typical case where it's being b'ksav, it's not just this generic statement done verbally. So in that case, according to many poskim, the Arvus will work. The problem that you run into is a ksav yad. The Rashdam's case says a shtar will work. A shtar usually means a shtar that's written with certain nuschois and signed by two edim. When it is just a ksav yad written by one person, there the Rashdam sounds like he lav dafka would be moida in that case. And therefore a handwritten note saying I will be an Arev is going to be questionable whether it will work. That being said, if the Arev gives signed head checks, which is also very common, he will give a head check, he'll write on it, this is Mukabal Arvus. So in that case, a check would very well, according to many places, have a din of a shtar, and therefore, even if the Arev did not know the identity of the lender at the time that he signed these papers, according to many places, it would work. But it is something to be careful about when you're approached to borrow, to lend money, and there's an Arev. Make sure the Arev knows who you are, and he's Mekabel Arvus in the specific transaction, as opposed to a generic Kabbalah, which will run into all sorts of shaylos of when it is binding and when it isn't. A person was approached for a loan, and he was hesitant. He didn't know who the borrower was. He didn't know his financial situation. So he called a good friend of the borrower and said, what's the story with this guy? Can he pay me? Is he good for the money? Can he afford to pay this money back? And the friend said, yes, he's doing phenomenally well. You can trust him. You can give him the money. No Arvus. He didn't ask him to become an Arev. He didn't offer to become an Arev. The friend just vouched for him. Yes, he has. His financials are good. The fellow lends the money. Sure enough, there's a default. And it turns out this borrower was penniless from day one. He didn't have a penny to his name. The lender then went after this friend and said, you told me he's good for the money. By saying that you are responsible for this loan, I want you to pay me back. So Shulchan Aruch paskins that the lender is correct. That when the person vouched and said that this borrower is good for the money, he can afford to pay you back, he becomes responsible for the loan. Now, it's clear, there are a few points need to be made. The first is that the Shach and most Achrayim point out, this has nothing to do with the sugya of Arvus. Although it's discussed, it's brought down in Simon Kuflav Tess, you never asked to be a guarantor, you never agreed to be a guarantor. So this is not really the sugya of Arvus. This is really a question of garmi, of mazik. If the lender says, should I trust this person? And you say yes, and it's baloney, you're a mazik. You caused him, in Hilchos Garmi, you caused him to lend money, essentially flush money down the toilet. There's no way to get it back. The person is an ani. And therefore, you're going to be chayiv midin mazik. It's like this. So because the chayiv is midin mazik, there are a few conditions that need to be met. The first is it has to be very clear that the lender is relying on you. You say yes, he gives over the check. You say no, he doesn't. On the other hand, if he's doing all sorts of due diligence, you're just one of the phone calls that he made. If there's no clear alai kosamichna, I'm relying on you, there's no din of garmi. Garmi has to be, you have to explicitly say, I am relying on you. You tell me to lend it, I'm going to give it. Now, in cases where you don't explicitly say it, but it's very obvious, then most places can say it has the same halacha. But stam, you call a guy up and say, by the way, is he good for the money? That is not enough. You need a very high level where it's clear you're relying on him. The second point that you need is, garmi is only if at the time that he advanced the money, the fellow was penniless. If he was doing okay and something happened afterwards, slip and fall, he got sued, he did a bad, made a bad investment, he lost money afterwards. That is no garmi. The garmi is at the time he asked the advice, you said he has money where he doesn't, so there you're a mazik. To take responsibility for what happens in the future, in Hilchas Mazik, there's no such thing. And therefore, it has to be at the time he didn't have the money. Now, the last point, which is really the point that you raised, is clearly, if in a normal case, the way the Shach explains it, even if you thought he had money, it's very nice you thought he had money. But it is almost impossible to know what's really doing in the person's, what his finances really are. He might be driving a very nice car. He might live in a very nice house. You don't know when the last time he made a mortgage payment is. You don't know what's borrowed. You don't know. It's very hard to know what's doing. And therefore, offering a definitive opinion, yes, he's good for the money, he's doing great, when it was just a guess, that's enough to be chayav al tzgarmi. Mitzad sheni, if you're his brother, you're his shotif, you taka have your hand, your knowledge of everything what's going on, and somehow in some cases you will have a tainus oinus. But normally, if you offer an opinion when you really don't have basis for that opinion, that is not called an oinus, that's called negligence. And therefore, by offering an opinion which is wrong, then you're going to be responsible for the hezek. What? Yes, that's a good kasha. I don't know the answer to that. You know, to the extent that no one has any knowledge, then you knew it was nothing more than a good opinion. I don't know. It's a good kasha. What?
You're asking his accountant, or you're asking
the family. Okay. That's true. Okay, if the case is where you ask his partner, where a partner sometimes does know, then the halacha makes sense. But then we're very much limiting it to a very extreme case. You asked someone who is in a position to know everything, and he didn't. He just made a guess. So again, if that's the answer, it's understandable, but then it's very, very limited.